Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the Pure Sex Radio program. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help men, women, and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. And on that note of being listener-supported, I'd love to ask you to consider giving a generous year-end gift to our ministry. This ensures that our programs continue to operate and that we're able to serve even more individuals and families in the coming year. So to partner with us, simply go to bebroken.org/donate, or you can call us at 210-822-8201 to make your gift. Thanks for your support, and we believe that we truly are better together. So in this episode, our guest is Stephen Thomas, who bravely shares his journey through struggles with pornography and same-sex attraction. Stephen opens up about his Christian upbringing and the shame that he felt for his early porn use, and the pivotal role that community, faith, and vulnerability were in his healing process. You know, he recounts how early exposure to pornography led to a cycle of hiddenness and shame, and how eventually opening up to his family and seeking therapy marked the beginning of his recovery. Stephen's story is a powerful reminder of the grace of God and the importance of authentic connections and support in overcoming deep personal struggles. To learn more about Stephen and his coaching services, visit StephenThomasConsulting.com, and that's a Stephen with a PH. For additional resources, visit BeBroken.org, or you can check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And of course, friends, please rate and review the podcast after listening so that you can help others to find it. Now, let's dive into today's moving conversation with Stephen. Well, all right, Stephen Thomas, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, John.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation because your name had come across my desk because actually our wives care director had come across some of the stuff that you do with men, with couples. And I just said, hey, I think, you know, Jonathan, I think you need to meet this guy, Stephen, and have him on the podcast. So whenever my wife's care director says that, she's a woman of great experience and wisdom, and I don't even have to worry about whether or not I need to vet this person. I was like, absolutely, let's have Stephen on the podcast. And so you and I got to meet briefly a couple of days ago, and I'm so excited about being able to share, have you share your story with our audience, because I think there's a lot of men who are going to resonate with certain aspects of your story that they either feel too ashamed or afraid to bring into the light. So can you maybe just kick it off by sharing your story with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in a Christian family, and it wasn't a nominal Christian family. My parents legitimately loved Jesus and tried to follow him to the best of their abilities. Even so, I was exposed to pornography at age 7. And a lot of that came from them both having to be at work, not being able to be at home with me. So a lot of time to myself. I'm the youngest of 4 siblings, and my older siblings were kind of in charge of watching over me. But yeah, I had a lot of time to myself, watched a lot of TV, and I believe I was really groomed by sexual content and television to be ready to say yes when pornography was actually presented to me. So porn turned into an out of control habit right away. And I consumed lots of pornography in my formative years, unfortunately. And then there was a lot of hiddenness here. I was ashamed of it. I remember at age 7 telling myself, oh no, I've committed like the second worst sin. I think the first worst sin is murder, and I'm watching pornography. But, you know, it was just like, it turned into a shame thing for me. And then when I was in junior high, things took a turn for the worst, in my perspective, because I noticed myself beginning to experiencing attraction towards the men I was viewing in the pornography I was watching. And as I've been able to grow and leave behind same-sex attraction in my life, I've been able to look back and see that there were a couple primary reasons this happened. One was that in school, 8 years old, I had some bullying and outright rejection from my male peers that really, again, developed sort of an inferiority complex about how I perceived myself as a man. And then the other part was just natural curiosity about the male's role in sexuality. So in other words, like I get to junior high and I'm watching pornography and I'm noticing that these guys feel, are, you know, they're strong, they're capable. The women are throwing themselves at these men. And I couldn't relate to what it would feel like to feel that strong and feel that kind of energy. And I was like watching them trying to learn, what do I need to figure out about being good at being a man, you know? So I was letting these male porn stars in a way teach me about masculinity. And obviously what they were teaching me was really broken. Over the course of doing that over an extended period of time, there's this brilliant quote from Dr. Ted Roberts, who started Pure Desire Ministries, that says, "Thoughts that fire together, wire together." So I was already in an aroused state and my attention and curiosity was directed at men because of my personal story, my own psychology that I brought to the table. And all of a sudden I'm feeling actual sexual arousal towards the men. And I remember telling myself at age 12 or 13, oh crap, I've made myself gay. That just was another kind of checkbox. Here's another reason why I'm inferior as a guy. This was something more to hate about myself. So unfortunately, you know, I just kept hiding. I was very scared about this. This was not what I had wanted to happen. And, you know, kind of anybody who struggled with sexual brokenness, you know, that there's this battle of, I hate this. I hate that I do this. And that there's a part of me that likes this. And, I do like this. So that tension of, I don't want this and I want this. And, like most Christian men who are struggling with sexual brokenness, I would pray, God, take this away from me. Would you take this issue away from me? Heal me, deliver me. And I'll get into how I do believe God answered my prayer, but in a bit of a unique way. But what I'll say is I kept hiding though. And it went from just porn usage to sexual engagement with other men. In college, I was engaging with men in person. And, you know, honestly, it was really devastating because I grew up actually always wanting to be married to a woman. I grew up wanting my own children. And this is a part that I get emotional about, but I thought I'd lost that because I'd lost my interest in women in that way for a time period, you know, and I didn't know how it was going to come back. I didn't know how I was going to stop, you know, engaging unhealthy sexuality. Because in my mind, I'm like, at some point, I'm going to be tempted and I need to say no for this to end. And I don't trust my ability to do that. I've never been able to do that. Mm-hmm. So like I was saying, I would pray, God, take this away from me. And what he did was he didn't take it away from me, but he started giving my parents dreams about me. And they confronted me. They said, Stephen, I would get caught. My mom was a tech guru. And I would delete history. I was a smart guy. And addicts actually are pretty genius when you look at
them. Oh, yeah.
They'll jump through. But I'm thinking I'm wiping everything clean and already, right? If you come to a computer that's wiped clean, it's already suspect, right? But my mom, she would figure out anyway what I was doing. She had a way to like, I don't know, figure that out. And, you know, I'd get caught in that way. They'd have dreams about me. They confronted me and I ran from that. But what I believe God's response to my prayer of take this away from me was, hey, Stephen, here's an opportunity to stop hiding. Do you want to take it? And honestly, coaching guys, you know, about getting into sobriety, I often say, like, to enter your promised land, we got to lay down some idols. One of those idols is hiddenness and image management. You know, those are deeply important things. And that's so uncomfortable because I was so used to hiding. I was so used to suffering and suffering in silence, suffering alone. There's so much shame there, but it was extremely uncomfortable. And there's a journey of learning now how not to hide. So
before we go too far towards kind of the recovery side of things, I want to explore a little bit more of this, you know, from Stephen at age 7 to, you know, these college encounters. What was going on in terms of just like social interactions during that time? And was there ever any opportunities, or was there ever any times where you did share with anybody about the things that were going on over those years?
Yeah. I mean, there's kind of a long, complicated answer, but on one hand, I'll say at age 16, that was the first time I actually ever confessed on my own to somebody. And I experienced 6 months of sobriety by that step of coming into the light. And I got on fire for God and started telling people about it. And I was like, look at this testimony God did in me. And I'm really extroverted, so I'm just wired that way. Everyone gets to know what's going on with me. And also, you know, a bit young too, and not aware of healthy boundaries of sharing and things like that. But the point is I was open and I tasted some freedom, and I went to a Christian school and I got elevated to this position of like, wow, so spiritually mature. So then I had a relapse, and it wasn't even that significant of one, but I felt so much shame again. I hadn't dealt with that root issue of shame that was present, and I hid harder. So, I mean, I was a social guy. I'm an extroverted guy. I was on homecoming council, but I had this underlying issue, this underlying secret that was going on that was just tearing me up. You know, I had a double life going on. I had learned to lie really well, learned to hide really well, hide from myself and others, frankly. So,
well, and as you said a minute ago, obviously you were building an image through this as well, right? You're projecting an image so that other people would see you the way you want them to see you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think as men, I mean, we all want to be perceived as strong and capable, you know. Mm-hmm. It's hard for guys to come clean about, this is where I'm weak. This is where I'm vulnerable. And with my own insecurity about my masculinity, I would say, I don't want this to sound victim-y, but I think it did contribute and make it more difficult. I do think that with security present, like, a guy who's secure in their masculine identity, you can lay down the perception of it because you know it. You know, if you're in health, you don't have to prove it. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I socially was really well known and also hiding. It was this duality that hurt me. Again, just being in the light was the only time I ever began to taste any degree of sobriety was by stepping out of that hiding.
Would you say it would be fair to say that you had developed social skills that served your image well, but you didn't actually know how to bond and connect authentically with anyone else?
That is probably really fair to say. I sometimes look back and think, man, I was a terrible friend because it was, how does this benefit me? Like, again, one thing I like to say is that in unhealthy sexuality, we're always actually fantasizing our adequacy. So, for example, if I had rejection pain from men, the bullying, I had an outright rejection. I went to a small private Christian school after a soccer game. I saw everybody pouring into a van going to a birthday party and realized I was the only one not invited. And I perceived that as, what's wrong with me? Maybe it's, I'm not as good at soccer. It turned into physical insecurities. Like, I'm not as strong as the other guys. And so for a guy to give me attention instead of rejecting me, it's like, oh, I don't have to feel insecure about myself, because I guess if this guy wants me to be with them in this intimate way, I guess I'm good. You know, so you're trying to escape this prison of this, you know, I call it my inferiority complex that was present. And so even in a non-sexual way, instead of leaning in and connecting with people, it was always about self-serving. Like, oh, if this person likes me, I get to feel good about myself.
Yeah. So then when did the scale start to tip where you realized I can't keep going down this path that I'm on, or I don't want to keep going down this path that I'm on? And then what did it look like to then truly come into the light and really begin kind of a recovery journey?
I mean, I think that I prayed along with trying to run from that light, and God hunted me down, and I resisted it at first. But, you know, I said my parents had dreams and confronted me, and at one point I finally came clean about what was going on, and they started getting me some help, started seeing a therapist, things like that. And, in that process of beginning to open up with some people, my brother had a dream. I have an older brother, and he asked me about what was going on, and I was ready to open up to him. So instead of running from that light, I began using him actually as my primary accountability, and I began to develop a life without secrets. I started practicing coming to the light instead of running from it. I was just so low, so hopeless that change could ever happen. Like, it felt like, you know, scoring that touchdown of resisting a temptation, like, I don't know how this is going to happen, because I'm the one who has to make that play. So yeah, in that hopelessness, I just got to a point where it's like, well, I mean, fortunately I have praying parents, and I can't even run from the light if I want to. So, I mean, to me, it's really the goodness of God, his kindness towards me, that he kept chasing me even as I was running away.
How vital was, cause I mean, I've talked with thousands of men and their stories. I've got a story myself, you know, of coming out of this. How vital was it, the connection between God's pursuit of you, but your plugging into authentic community and learning to actually connect with other people? Because I think people, I mean, I know I've met a lot of Christian men over the years that they spent far longer than they needed to, sort of just isolated and alone in their closet, crying out to God, and nothing's changing, because they're unwilling to actually connect with other people on this journey. And they've sort of thought, in some ways, in a false way, they've thought, listen, all I need is God. All I need is God. And there's an aspect of that that is true. But what you're even indicating in your story is like, well, my alone time with God was not seeming to have an effect immediately on transforming how I was managing my sexuality. So can you talk a little bit about the need to understand that absolutely it is God who has the power to transform our lives, but the environment and the means through which he does that is often counter to what we try to attempt.
Yeah, no, I love what you're bringing up here, Jonathan, because here's the thing. Like, I like to say, it was God who said it's not good for man to be alone, and that happened before sin. So he's wired us relationally. Every person at the core of us has a deep desire to be seen, to be known, to be loved. That's why it's often a very cathartic experience when people enter the gay lifestyle and say, I'm going to be known and loved, you know, like, I'm just going to accept that, right? So we all innately are wired for that and need that. And God's answer to my prayer was, get in relationships, stop hiding. Here's an opportunity to. So you're right. Like, he sort of set me up. He said, here, I'll take you to the entrance, and I need you to take this step. And you actually want this, though. You actually do want to not hide, you know? And yes, that's true. So there is that sort of duality where we can partner with the healing God has for us. You know, there's, he's a part of it, and he invites us. Honestly, to be really honest with you on this, I like to say too, God actually develops you, grows you, and repairs you, and heals you, where he makes you the superhero of your own story. You walk in and partner with his plan for you. And it's kind of like, look at my son, look at what you're doing. You know, he celebrates us because he's a father. And there's something really beautiful about that. But you're right. If we focus on God and don't learn how to build healthy relationships and be known and sit at the table of connection in the presence of our enemies and the presence of our fight, most guys are just going to spiral and go nowhere. I've not met the guy who's been able to do that without it.
So talk to us about what it looked like for you specifically pertaining to the same-sex attractions. What did that journey look like in recovery? And how is that maybe unique as part of recovery, but also how is that not any different than anybody that's trying to recover from any kind of unwanted sexual behavior?
Yeah. So, you know, I said my brother reached out to me and I started to become open with him. And in the process of being open, I started to experience, you know, fewer relapses. And I'm like, you know, praise God for the progress that's happening. And in that process of staying open, I met a beautiful woman, a young lady, and I was into her. And that was really exciting to me because, like I said, I thought I'd lost this opportunity that was actually a deep desire of my heart. But I was into her, she was into me, and we went on a date and quickly realized, okay, this is a special person. So I knew that I needed to let her know right away, like, about my story with and my journey with same-sex attraction. Like, I didn't want to spring that up on her a day before we get married or something. So I told her really early. And and, you know,
that's a bold move. Was that scary?
I mean, at that point, I don't know, but it wasn't as scary as I think it should have been. I think for some people I talk to, it feels scarier, but it's just like, listen, like, I want intimacy. Like, I don't want to do hiding, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, that was the work God was doing in my life. I had this dream of what marriage could be, that it'd be connected. So it's hard to do connection when you have big secrets like this, right? So, so I shared that with her. Seemed like she had some grace for that. And then about 6 weeks into dating, I had a relapse with porn, and I knew I needed to confess that. So I confessed it to her, and she, when I shared that with her, I mean, she cried. She let me know how it impacted her. And she actually was really honest with me and said, "Steven, like, I don't know if I will have grace to do relationship with you if this is an ongoing issue, especially if it's gay, if it's like, you know," and if you think of how a woman is wired, they want to know they're enough, you know? So trying to compete with a gender she is not, you know, like, it's just, she's like, "I don't have grace to do that." Not in like a mean way. It was just like, it will destroy my soul, is essentially what she's saying. So I said something very bold that I couldn't believe I was saying, but I said, "I'll never do it again." But that was the last time I'd ever used porn. I was over 16 years ago now. And yes, I've been free for 16 years from porn hookup stuff, leaving behind same-sex attraction. So the thing is what I find this even in working with guys. So to take this all back to the question you asked, I often find that when we take the humble road of coming clean and entering into the light, laying down our pride, essentially, there's a grace that comes. And I actually had really quick clarity that I didn't want anything to do with my past, and that I wanted my wife, and I was joyful about that. So that's awesome. And it's interesting because I then entered into long-term sobriety with clarity of like, okay, I really don't want to go back to anything old. And we actually still went through some really hard seasons of marriage, even though I've not brought the addiction in. I still needed to learn to connect. But the process of healing our marriage, I dealt with the underlying roots that produce same-sex attraction. So, so God brought healing sort of post-sobriety. And I actually, that's an important part to me, because I do think that there's some guys who think they're healing away from sobriety, but that's victim thinking. It's like, no, you're not a victim to your healing. So
I like what you're saying here, Steven, too, because a lot of times guys don't see the connection or maybe the distinction between sobriety, which is really saying, "Hey, listen, I'm not acting out anymore. I'm not doing these behaviors anymore," and the underlying need for emotional health and maturity.
Yes.
Because you just mentioned it, and I want you to talk a little bit more about it, about finally understanding what the roots were to your same-sex attraction, but also what some of those roots were to why you weren't good at connecting in relationships. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll tell you about that in the context of my story again, which is I'm thinking, okay, you know, we're getting married now. I'm on cloud nine because done with homosexuality. I'm free from porn. This woman I love, amazing. Bible says, husbands, love your wives. I already love her. Great. We're ready to go. And we both smirk at that because, you know, there's a lot more to husbands, love your wives than that, right? I quickly learned that, you know, I like to say that underneath addiction is a connection problem. And I was really difficult to connect with, and we really struggled in marriage. We fought a lot. I was very defensive, easily angered, dismissive. And I blamed her. I'm like, I'm sober. Like, go find another guy who hasn't used porn in marriage. Like, I was a jerk. Mm. And she got to the end of herself. She got to the end of herself, and it got to a point that she wanted to divorce me. Mm. So we had to go on a journey of building a good marriage and learning to connect. So the point is I was so used to shoving away my own emotions and avoiding my own feelings of inadequacy that I couldn't handle when she had needs or pain. I took her needs as something wrong with me and I'd get defensive. It's like, I'm showing up so good. I'd fight back, you know, not realizing that that's not how you respond. That's not how to love your wife. You know, it's actually victim thinking when you're trying to change your wife and make them different so your life can be better. That's still being a victim. I had no clue how to do that. And so I was struggling to connect with myself. I was struggling to connect with her. Marriage is going to crap. And we got help. And what I realized is, like, you know, to bring this into dealing with the underlying wounds. I realized that, oh, it's not her. These are my own pain points that I've not processed fully yet that I'm bringing to the marriage already. She just triggers them because we live so close together. You know, we live in close proximity that she hits these triggers because that's, you know, how marriage works, right? And so an example would be like a common trigger that I have is a belief system of I don't matter. So my belief of I don't matter would show up like if she had pain and I didn't feel like she was seeing me for all the effort I'm trying and stuff like that. And then what I realized is it's the same thing though, you know, with men. I felt like I didn't matter to men, you know? So I just started doing the deeper level healing and realizing, oh, this is the same wound that like hit and produced or that created same-sex attraction in my life. That this is the same wound I was trying to fix with unhealthy sexuality. So, I mean, that's essentially what happened. And I became I started doing a lot of work to really process all the things that produce same-sex attraction, because it's like, you know what? I want to heal from this. Like, I don't want this stuff present. I want to be a good husband. I want to give my wife, you know, all of me. So I don't want these things present. And I mean, truth is, healing is a continuous journey for the rest of our lives. But I've been amazed at what God has showed me. One thing, like again, for in particular, that I think applies to all guys, whether they struggle with same-sex attraction or not, is just the realization that me fixating on other men was me thinking, oh man, they're doing something really good in their masculinity. Like think back to the porn I was watching. These guys got it, you know, all together, and wanting to be, you know, affiliated with that, wanting to associate with that. I realized that if I'm fixating on other guys in that way, I'm continuing to treat myself as inadequate. Because the truth is, I have all the masculinity I need. God made me well. So I don't need to treat myself rudely and behave in ways treating myself as like I'm not enough. And the same thing applies. Let's say a guy who doesn't struggle with same-sex attraction, like maybe attention from a pretty woman makes you feel good about yourself. If you're walking securely in your identity, you don't need that external hit. You're just going to focus on, I'm going to run the race in the lane that I'm called to run in, pursuing my wife, and I'm going to make that great. And you realize, oh, it's treating ourselves as inferior to look outside these lanes for that kind of hit.
Yeah. So we've got a few minutes left here. I want you to speak to two different guys that may be watching. One is a guy that maybe he is just right at the very beginning of this journey. Maybe he's days or weeks into just maybe even a confession or a disclosure of some kind or getting caught. And he's like, man, my soul and my mind just kind of hyperventilating. I don't know what to do. What would you say to him in terms of like, hey, what's your first next best step in terms of pursuing a life of greater integrity and not going back to the old ways of the sexual brokenness?
I mean, I do think the first step is to come to the light. Just get it all, find some safe people to get open with, I think is the first step. Because then after that, you're going to be learning to reconnect to yourself and understand what's going on in you emotionally and learning to respond to your emotions in healthy ways rather than let your negative emotions drive the bus off the cliff, so to speak. But yeah, the first step is to come to the light and really give yourself to a process of building a new way of living, where you're making space to develop the emotional health that I just talked about, learning to do connection. You're used to hiding, so you really want to kill that.
Yeah, that's good. Now, the other group of men that I want you to address are the guys that, you know, they've been on this recovery journey for a while, you know, maybe months, maybe even some years, but they're either feeling stuck or flat. Like, you know, you mentioned about, listen, this is a lifelong journey, but maybe they're either not embracing that or they're just going, man, I feel like I've been doing this for a while. And maybe they've got some sobriety, but they're just not connecting maybe with some of the deeper issues of transformation and healing. What would you say to them in terms of what their next step may be to going to the deeper places of recovery that are beyond just sobriety?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, it's important to stay open, right? And keep confessing, oh, this is maybe a sexual battle I had, even if you win it. You know, stay open about that stuff. But here's the thing. It's more so than just confessing like sexuality. It's confessing things that are deeper. Like, and the truth is, it's really hard for me to show up. I'm embarrassed to tell you this because I had to tell you the same thing last week. You know what I mean? Like, it's these deeper issues that guys don't get vulnerable about that kind of stunts the growth, I believe. And, or it's, I'm really hopeless about my marriage. You know, you could be stuck in some, you know, be honest. Is your marriage what you want if you're married? Are your relationships what you want them to be? We have to reconnect to ourselves and what we really want at our soul and use that, you know, yield that to God and also use that as sort of a guide to say, where's the next area of growth for me? But if your relationships aren't flourishing, that's where I would focus. Again, we're relational beings. You're wired for it. I think guys that are spiraling, feeling like they're going nowhere and maybe not getting sobriety or already have sobriety, that sounds to me like some disconnection to self. And that reconnecting to self is, you know, let's share the deeper issue here. You don't want to tell the group of guys that you're still working on the issue you've been working on for the last 3 months, you know, like that.
Well, Stephen, this has been a great conversation. Where can our listeners and viewers go to kind of learn more about you and what you're doing in this space of ministry?
Yeah, so my website is stephenthomasconsulting.com. And if you want to get help, there's a couple options I offer. I do work with men individually. I also work with couples. I love helping guys become excellent at pursuing their wives. I also do disclosure work. And love to do that in tandem with other betrayal trauma therapists or coaches that are willing to work in tandem with a guy like me, but have had a lot of really good experiences doing that. I also have created a masterclass called the Get Free, Stay Free Masterclass. And it's basically me unpacking over the course of 10 weeks, everything I know about, you know, that has contributed to me finding 16 years of sobriety. And again, I'm so hungry for guys to find sobriety and then enter into the abundance of life, like the beauty of connection at home, cultivating that in their life. Because again, sobriety is really just the bridge into the promised land. You know, sobriety is not the end game. It's what you build off of, you know? Mm-hmm. So this is really unpacking everything that has helped me get free and stay free. Especially, and I want to say again, the concepts of this are common to all men. So I work with lots of guys that struggle with same-sex attraction and lots of guys that don't. So those are the offerings I have right now. I also have some coaches I've trained too that I could pair you up with because, you know, if we ever get busy, we have space is what I'm trying to say. So
that's good. Yeah. Well, Stephen, I always appreciate guys that are willing to be open and honest and vulnerable with their stories. So thanks for sharing that. And thanks for sharing your wisdom with us today and being on the program.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to put some great links into the show notes so that you can connect with Stephen. And we want to help you take your next best step to wholeness in Christ. So please reach out to us. And we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.